Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 43. We're covering the Dell Technologies Championship on the PGA Tour and the Made in Denmark on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me we have European Tour expert Paul Williams and resident podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan. Good evening, chaps.
Evening, gentlemen.
All right, guys.
Golfbettingsystem.co.uk, Twitter handles at Bamford Golf for me, Paul is at Golf Betting, Barry at A Good Talk Golf. We're available on Podbean, iTunes, TuneIn for Android, Spotify, that's where I listen, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM and Podtail. Naturally, subscribe, follow the podcast and spread the word. Please take time to rate, plus review us on iTunes, it helps to keep all of our weekly content free across the website, YouTube and the podcast. And I just want to mention, in terms of YouTube, please join us in our crusade. I've started a crusade for 2,000 subscribers to our weekly YouTube broadcast, The Golf Betting Show. Now, that goes out on a Tuesday over here in the UK, Tuesday morning, UK time. And started the crusade last week and got around about 65 new subscribers to the show last week. So it'd be superb to get 2,000 by the end of the year. So I put links through in the description box in Podbean to the two golf betting shows that will be going out tomorrow. One for the Dell Technologies and one for the Made in Denmark. Right. We've got so much to talk about, chaps. So little time.
Indeed.
Shall we quickly talk? Let's talk. Where should we start? Czech Masters. I didn't see a lot of it, to be honest. I know that it's been fun, isn't it? You know, a lot of people following Olsen and Peters the last 2 weeks
of very
short single digits, and yeah, that's delivered nothing.
No, although, I mean, I was away, as you know, so I didn't catch any of the live action. I was just following it on my phone as and when I could. But it looked like he was getting himself into a position to make a real charge, Peters, but didn't quite happen, did it? And
I think he went out in the second last group Saturday.
Saturday, yeah, kind of just trod water from there, didn't he? 71 over the weekend. So, and again, he started quickly on Sunday, didn't he? With eagle birdie, which gave a glimpse of hope, bit of a chance, but didn't happen, did it? And the guys at the top just eased themselves away from it.
Did the winner, Paul, follow your pre-event concept?
Not really, no. He's a big lad, Pavan, but he's not the longest off the tee. He's kind of middle distance, 290, low 290. So he's not short. He's not long. He's if you look at his average stats on a week where he's played, he might finish 35th or 40th for driving distance. That kind of number. But at the end of the day, he was long enough. He topped my greens and regulation stats for the week, for the rolling stats that I put together for the predictor model. So clearly he was hitting a lot of greens in recent times, and he'd finished the previous event off really quick, with a fast final round, with an impressive final round, 64 I think it was. So clearly he was in decent nick, and when push came to shove, he converted. Held off Harrington, which given Harrington's form on a Sunday, over the years, his ability to convert, that was pretty impressive.
When you
stuff,
put a 1.5 something, it kind of works, doesn't it?
Yeah,
like an absolute demon. That's an interesting point about Harrington. One for mental notes. When he gets thrown off the PGA Tour every year, he tends to come across to Europe and go well in one of these low scoring events, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, if he gets somewhere where he feels he can get away with his bad drives and still recover and give himself a chance on the greens, then as we saw the weekend, he can get himself in the mix.
He's still got plenty of mumbo off the tee as well.
Yeah, he's not short, is he?
No.
His new pump drill seemed to have added a lot of distance, or so he said. I don't know if you saw it at all.
Yeah. Saw
but yeah. the new swing du jour for driving ranges around Europe. I mean, Pavan, his golf balls looked like they had a magnet in them to the bottom of the hole all weekend. It was insane. Yeah. And
it's not many winners you see putt at 1.53, I think it was, putting average. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. There was just a couple of, as always, a couple of real key moments down the stretch. Like Harrington missing a 5-footer on 15 to make bogey. That kind of opened the door a little bit. And then Pavan getting over the water by maybe 2 yards on the 16th, the par 3, and then holding what must have been a 30, 35-footer that looked like it was going to pull up about 6 foot short and just seemed to, I don't know, get a bit of acceleration or something. That dropped, and, you know, Harrington missed, you know, putts on 16, 17, 18. And, yeah, it was just, it was, as obviously as an Irish fan and big fan of Padraig's, it was really kind of, it was kind of torturous watching it kind of slip away from him.
Yeah.
But you got to give credit to Pavan. It was 5 birdies on the back 9. That is, that's a way to put your hands on the trophy.
Yeah, it was impressive stuff, wasn't it? So, yeah, I'm not sure it completely rewrites my view of the event going forward. You know, we had Paul Peterson win this, was it 3 years ago? 2 or 3 years ago. And again, he's, you know, he's a relatively short hitter, and he held off Thomas Peters that year. And again, it was, I mean, that year it was more about his tee to green performance than the putter. So clearly, if you get someone who's in very strong form with one or other aspects of their game, they're going to be able to give the Bombers a really good game here. But generally, I think you'll find the longer hitters can score more readily here. But clearly, they're not necessarily getting the job done. It's an interesting track. It's an interesting event, given that you've got these different kind of nuances to how it pans out. But yes, no return for me, unfortunately. You got a little bit of Scott back on yours, Steve, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. When Spieth started spraying it everywhere, I started losing my rag. And Adam stayed in there, didn't he? He played neat and tidy. Do you know what? He topped putting average last week.
Incredible. Yeah, that's kind of your premise for backing him, wasn't it?
That guy's putting has been absolutely phenomenal this season. I can remember a few months ago, we were sitting here absolutely, you know, crucifying the chap, saying, you know, tee to green, he's one of the best in the world still elite level, but, you know, his putting was absolutely abysmal. And now all of a sudden, he's got that long putter. He was fourth for putting average, and he topped strokes going putting last week. That's unbelievable. And when he had that eagle chance on 17, you just kind of thought, well, he's going to make it, and bang, straight in the middle. Yeah.
Some turnaround, as you say, and very timely, but very timely eagle rather for each way backers.
I think DeChambeau, though, that's one. He's a class player, DeChambeau. You think about it, all of his three wins now. He won the John Deere Classic up in Connecticut. He then, this year, won for us at Muirfield Village, didn't he? Ohio, Benpoa Greens. And he then goes there when he really needs to deliver something. You read stuff and hear stuff on Twitter saying, oh, you know, he's been given the nod already. But that performance last week was a performance of, you know, don't doubt the captain's pick, you know, I'm in this team deservedly. And he absolutely ran away with it on Saturday. And he never opened the door at all, did he? Absolutely phenomenal performance, DeChambeau.
Was he anywhere near your thinking for last week's day?
No, I focused far too much last week on the top 13, 15 at the PGA. Quite rightly, because there was a big trend there.
Mm.
But if you looked at DeChambeau, game really fitted the course. Long, but straight, which we knew driving accuracy was going to be fairly important. Plays well upstate. Motivated, although it could have gone two ways, couldn't it? If he knew that he was a captain's pick, he could have. I don't think it works like that.
I don't think he would have known before the event. Probably. Definitely not. He probably doesn't know now, but he's in pole position now,
isn't he? He's got to go. He's got to be in. And it was just, yeah. He also played. I think it was 30th at Bridgestone. He missed the cut at the PGA. Didn't play at all well. But at Bridgestone, I think he first round was disastrous, and then it was one of those jobs where he actually, if you took the Friday through Sunday, he played quite nicely. So he was still there or thereabouts. He was still playing some reasonable golf, and 80-1. I think there was a smidge of 100s at Unibet, and then but mainly 80s. I mean, that was a cracking winner. So yeah, I know a lot of people were on him at that price. So congratulations if you were on him. But yeah, it was okay, wasn't it? Now that leads us into the Ryder Cup. Now we know, of course, that the top eight in the American squad are selected. Although there's another question now about Ricky Fowler because he's just withdrawn from this week's Boston event.
Mm-hmm.
So he's clearly got an injury that's quite serious, but we'll cross that bridge in a while. Captain's picks are going to be announced on Tuesday next week after the finish of the Dell Technologies on the Monday. Don't forget, it runs Friday, Monday, the Dell Technologies, for Labor Day over in the States. We're pretty assured that Tiger's in, Mickelson's in. You cannot see a reason that DeChambeau won't be a captain's pick. And then you've got one left, which clearly Tony Finau's putting his hand up for in no uncertain terms.
Yeah.
What have you guys, do you think it's pretty much a done deal already, or do you see a scenario where somebody of a Schauffele, a Kisner, a Patrick Cantlay type would literally need to win this week to kind of change, you know, that fourth selection?
But isn't it a case that they have three picks after this week and then one after?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, the week after.
So, okay, Lefty, Woods, DeChambeau are in, yes?
Yeah. Yeah, and you, I would imagine the smart play would be to pick them after this week and then hold off the last pick to see who shows up this week, next week. Yeah. And whatever happened last week. You know, Finau played well last week, so did Cantlay. I think, for me, Finau and Cantlay are the ones that are kind of at the head of the that race to get on, possibly a little bit ahead of Schauffele, because he just seems to have gone off the boil since the Open Championships.
Yeah, he has.
It's got to be some effort from Cantlay, isn't it? He's got to go out there and probably win this week to elevate himself up to the kind of level where he's kind of knocking on that door. Because even given last week, he's still quite a way down the list. I know the list has absolutely no bearing on it now because clearly he's going to make his picks. But
I agree. I think where Finau has the advantage as well is clearly his major championship performances.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Where Cantlay hasn't got that on his CV. I agree with Paul. I think for Cantlay to qualify instead of Finau, he needs to do something seriously good, or a Schauffele type, and that's possible. You know, we've seen it with Ryan Moore; it can happen. And of course, there is this potential scenario where if Ricky Fowler isn't fit to play. Now, what happens then? Clearly, there's going to need to be an addition to the squad.
Yep.
Yeah, so I wonder if it defaults down to the ninth in the points, or if there's an extra pick. I had a bit of a root around and couldn't seem to find anything.
Yeah, there must be a precedent. There must be a rule for it, at least, even if there's not a recent precedent for it. But logically, I'd say it goes down to the next in line. But perhaps,
you'd assume it goes to DeChambeau at nine, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Which would then free up an additional captain's pick.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's probably semantics at the end of the day, isn't it? Because it probably doesn't make a great deal of difference because, you know, if DeChambeau's in, DeChambeau's in. It's just whether Ricky's in, and if that's the case, then it does free up a pick further down the line.
But clearly, you know, if you're on the on the range in Boston tomorrow or Wednesday, and you're in that professional arena, you know what's going on with Fowler. You know what rumours there are, discussions being had. And if you're a Patrick Cantlay, a Xander Schauffele, a number of players, there must still be a little bit of hope there that if you really do perform across Boston and across Aronimink, Philadelphia, you know, you've still got a chance of getting in there. Because, you know, I've been reading around it, and these oblique injuries are not at all easy to clear up.
No, they can be quite persistent, can't they? And it's not necessarily. He's got a month, just under a month to just over a month to get it sorted out. And perhaps he doesn't play this week. Well, he clearly doesn't play this week. Perhaps he doesn't play for the rest of the FedEx Cup if that's what it takes for him to be, you know, fit for the Ryder Cup. We shall see.
What about Europe, guys? I mean, there's even more questions in terms of the European team.
Yes,
the way I read it, anybody playing in Boston this week cannot now qualify for that last automatic spot that Tor Bjørn currently holds.
Yeah.
So in that case, and from what I've been seeing on Twitter, we've got the likes of Fitzpatrick and Pepperell who can still jump above Tor Bjørn to get that last spot.
Yeah, they're the only two that have got a mathematical chance of making it because, as you say, Poulter, Cabrera, Bello, Casey, they're all playing over at Boston, aren't they? But the points don't count from Boston. It's just the points in Denmark.
Yeah.
So Fitz has got to... He's in 12th spot. So he's in the fourth captain's pick spot, if you look at it that way. He needs to win, and Olsen needs to finish outside the top seven. Pepperell's a bit further down. He's in 14th spot. So he's a couple of spots behind Fitz. But yes, he needs to win it as well. And Olsen needs to finish outside the top dozen or so. So there are scenarios where either Fitzpatrick or Pepperell can leapfrog everyone in front of them and land up in that eighth position and automatically qualify. Because Poulter can't do it. Cabrera Bello can't do it unless he jumps on a plane and decides, you know, at the 11th hour to come and play over in Denmark. Casey can't do it. So Sergio's not even playing. So these guys aren't going to be a factor. It's purely down to how the likes of Fitzpatrick and Pepperell perform. And clearly there's a lot of pressure for those two guys as well.
And okay, so that's the automatic spot. You've then got a scenario, of course, of the four captains' picks being announced on Sunday after the tournament. Is that correct, or Monday morning?
It's on the 5th of September. They're doing a live show on Sky Sports for it, where Thomas will reveal all spread over about 3 hours and a multitude of
okay. Time spent. So it's on. So it's next Wednesday, but effectively, of course, the finish line is Sunday afternoon over in Denmark.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well,
yeah, you got it. For the automatic spots.
Yes, for the automatic spots. But then, of course, we've got the captain spots.
Yeah.
So let's, on the basis that Tor Bjørn qualifies, we've got four spots between the likes of Poulter, who for me is Poulter is a lock. I've got a feeling that Stenson's going to be a lock, even though he's carrying this injury, which of course could be dangerous. And then we've got Garcia, Thomas Peters, Rafa Cabrera Bello.
You know, you look down the list. Peters is again, you know, looking similar to the Cantlay scenario. He's a long way down. Mm. You know, he's had his opportunities to, you know, to put his hand up. And you know, last week, arguably, you know, he's on a track that he's won and he's come very close to winning before, and a field that wasn't particularly strong in a position that he was in, and he dropped away. You know, why should Thomas Peters get that pick? It doesn't feel right to me.
When I saw Peters playing last week, he looked like a man who had pressure on his face. Yeah. Visible pressure on his face. So, to me, like reading between the lines on that, he's been told, you need to go perform at a like mega level, win or push it really close.
Mm-hmm. That's what I said and, last week. I thought he had to win last week, and clearly he got in position and he couldn't hold on.
And that was the look he seemed to have on his face. Yeah. Now, look, we could be well wide of the mark on that, but that's what it felt like to me, and I think the same applies this week. It's a win or bust, or else you just you have to start striking players off that shortlist somewhere or other. And he's only just getting hot now.
So most likely someone out of Garcia, Casey, and Cabrera Bello is going to miss out.
Yep.
Yeah, and how mad? Like to me, that's mad that Cabrera Bello and Casey are playing over in the States when they could come over and win at a tournament that has like they are going to have a much better chance of winning because it's a weaker field.
Yeah,
and that gets them in.
And the permutations aren't anywhere near as stringent because they're a significant number of points ahead of where Fitzpatrick is. So
yeah, they could probably beat Torbjörn in a playoff and maybe still.
Yeah, exactly. It would be far less stringent.
Doesn't exactly show, it's typical kind of golfer mentality, isn't it? It's kind of
chase the money,
chase the FedEx Cup points, which is their decision at the end of the day. They're their own personal company at the organisation, aren't they? But it doesn't exactly show a 100% commitment to the Ryder Cup cause, does it?
No.
But then a lot of these players don't necessarily do that throughout the whole season, do they? They'll play their bare minimum over on the European Tour. They'll get, by the letter of the law, they'll qualify to play for Team Europe, and then spend the rest of their time over on the PGA.
It's like Garcia. If he does get the nod, I mean, I haven't closely looked at the European Tour schedule, but in my mind, the only event he will play will be the Amiga Masters up in Switzerland. Hmm. That'll be his only event between missing out at the Wyndham Championship and going to the Ryder Cup.
Yeah,
that's mad.
I don't think he plays. Personally, I don't think Garcia plays. I don't think he plays. I'm not convinced that Stenson plays. Unless he proves himself to be 100% fit, I think that's too much of a risk. Why put an injured man in the squad?
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
I think Poulter's in. I think Cabrera Bello, in all likelihood, is in. I'm not entirely convinced on Casey, although I've got a suspicion he will end up there. And I think that leaves one. And if you get the likes of a Fitzpatrick or a Pepperell who do particularly well this week, and just miss out, does that not give them a case? Not sure. I think Fitzpatrick could be a very strong shout for a pick if he finishes even second or third this week and he just misses out.
He's flattered to deceive all year, isn't he, Fitzpatrick?
He's not been great. He's shown some decent snippets of form and then just not converted He was good in Scotland, wasn't he?
He's been at the top of a lot of Friday morning, Friday afternoon leaderboards. You think, all right, and then he just disappears over the weekend.
So we're
not any further forward, really. I suppose we won't be until the announcement. have you ever known it this complex? It's a complex scenario, isn't it?
It's not straightforward, is it? I think Poulter's nailed on. I don't think there's any argument in my mind that he's not going to play, but there are question marks around the other three, and that does open up the door for a big performance either side of the Atlantic this week, just to hold a hand up and say, this is me, I want to play.
I personally agree with Andrew Coulter on Sky. I think Poulter's in, I think Stenson will play. I think he's a lock. I think he will play despite his injury, and then it's two of the others. So, if Garcia plays, will he put RCB with him? So you've got a Spanish dream team. Does he go with Casey? Oh, it's, who knows? We'll find out. It's a tough, to be fair to Bjorn, it's a tough, tough decision.
Mm.
It really is. And I said to you, Barry, I mentioned, are you concerned slightly about the lack of kind of European performances that we're seeing over in the States recently? There hasn't been a great deal, has there?
Well, the Ryder Cup's not for another month. There's no point in being hot right now. And we're not playing, and it's not being played in the States. It's being played in Paris.
Yeah. Totally different, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to hit the panic button right yet, Steve. Mm. I think when it comes to the Ryder Cup, I think to a certain extent you can throw the recent form book out the window because it's match play, there's the atmosphere. I mean, if somebody's really playing rotten, like we've seen them being benched before, but the only person that I'd say is playing really poorly if he was to get on the team would be Sergio. And like Sergio could just turn it on the week and just play outrageous.
Yeah, he could do. But as you say, he's not playing well. To put him in the first place is the risk, isn't it?
Yeah, but there'd be some to be an interesting reaction if he wasn't picked.
That'd be an interesting reaction either way, won't it?
Yeah.
I think this is it. It's difficult, isn't it? You've got a team that's absolutely packed, full of big names and quality in the American ranks, and to leave out players of, you know, worldwide renowned players of the like of Garcia or a Paul Casey, and go for lesser known players that who would need to be in good form to get that spot. I don't know. It's you know. It's as long as it's short, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, look, we could sit here and do a round table on this for a few hours and still not be any closer to a decision that we're comfortable with.
Well, Lee Westwood's an interview I saw on YouTube.
This is great. Go on, tell the story. I think it's brilliant.
It's on YouTube. I can't tell you who it is. There's three individuals. They're on a stage in Ireland. In front of an audience, and one of the guys who says he's very, very close to Thomas Bjorn, knows him really well, constantly tweeting each other and DMing each other. He swears blind that Lee Westwood will be a captain's pick. And he was having none of it from the other two panellists and from the derisory nature of the audience's reaction that Lee Westwood will not be in the Ryder Cup team for Team Europe.
But just hang on. This wasn't one of the fake panel shows we do here that are just comedians on the stage.
Might be.
Because we do that here for for sports shows.
They knew more than comedians would know. So yeah, Lee West
perhaps
was playing.
Perhaps that's the decision.
Maybe that's why he was playing last week in Checo. I mean, we thought he was there to keep an eye on what was going on, but really it's to find the form that he needs to power us to victory at the Golf National.
Yeah, he played all right for a day, didn't he?
For a day. Right.
I mean, I think the collective jaw drop, if he got picked, would register on the Richter scale.
This guy's reasoning was that Thomas Bjorn is, Thomas Bjorn will pick who he wants to pick. And, you know, whatever statistics or whatever rhyme and reason goes against his idea, he won't care. He will just choose who he wants. So from what that guy's saying, it's going to be Poulter, Garcia, Stenson and Lee Westwood. Because those are the four guys he wants to play.
A lot of experience in there, I'll give you that.
A lot of experience. Yeah. Right, come on then. We better crack on because... time's moving ahead. Should we talk Made in Denmark first?
Yeah, let's do that. This one's going to be all about Thomas Bjorn as well, because this is Thomas Bjorn's home track. We're moving from Himmerland, where we've had the last four Made in Denmark events, to Silkeborg, I think you pronounce it. Or something along those lines, which is where Thomas Bjorn was born. This is where Thomas Bjorn played a lot of his formative golf, which is where Thomas Bjorn has a residence even now. He was involved in a restoration or a renovation of the course back in 2007, and clearly there's going to be a lot about him this week in terms of that, and clearly there's going to be a lot about him this week in terms of the Ryder Cup as well. So expect to see a lot of Thomas on your screens over the course of the week. Not from the top of the leaderboard, I suspect. Although, if you fancy a punt on Thomas, he's available around about 400-1 at the moment. So
400-1. That sounds like a Barry punt.
I think that gives you
It's not long enough for me.
It needs to be four figures to have a punt on that. But clearly he knows the course better than anyone, and he'll be involved in a lot of the conversation at least. So again, as we were just saying, you've got this kind of subplot that's going to be ticking over through the course of the 4 days as well. So it's going to be something for us to keep an eye on. But as to how that's going to impact play, well, we shall see. I mean, you've still got at the top of the... I'm just bringing up the odds quickly. You've got Torbjørn Olsen, who's the favourite for this week. And I think he's still getting there. 9-1, he's been... taken into now. Thomas Peters out there at 14-1. So you've got the two guys that Steve was saying at the top of the show have been heavily backed over the last couple of weeks, and both of them have failed to deliver, although they've both come quite close to performing and delivering for their backers over the last couple of weeks. But again, you're getting some skinny prices on these guys. I mean, does 9-1 against Olsen excite either of you two?
No,
he's got way too many things to deal with to worry about winning the tournament.
Yeah,
he just he knows I need to finish top five, and that'll be his, you know, just to guarantee it and lock the guys out.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll be his focus.
Yeah.
And even if he's leading on the final day, I'd say it's probably a good bet and running to go out, you know, to back whoever else is up against him.
Yeah, it's going to be about protecting that position, isn't it? As you say, you know, he'll know mathematically where he needs to be by that point, and if it needs to be, you know, top seven or better, or, you know, if it's already job done because the other two guys have kind of dropped away, it doesn't sniff that he's going to go all out for the victory. And Peter's 14-1. I mean, he varies from 10s to 14s, depending which book you go to. But again, it's you know, given what we saw last week, there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders, and I don't know, he's taking a bit of a risk on that kind of punt at that kind of price. And further down, we talked about Fitzpatrick and Pepperell, and they're the two guys that follow that in the betting at 18 and 22-1, respectively. They've both got a chance, I think. And then you're down to the kind of mid-division, so the likes of Danny Willett, Lucas Beauregard, Martin Keimer at 40-1 if you fancy an ex-rider Kappa, ex-world number one to make a point. And Matt Wallace, who I backed last week, 40-1 this week if you fancy a bit of week after writers.
He got quite close, didn't he? And then just fell away on the Saturday.
Yeah, he had a decent round on the Friday, didn't he? Got himself in a couple of
the lead.
I thought
the dream was alive.
Yeah.
Our dream was very much alive, and then it faded.
Yeah, he played really well on the Friday, by the looks of it. And, you know, and he was very vocal on Twitter about how he was doing. He's going to go out 100% the next day. Kicked off with a birdie, and then nothing happened after that. And, you know, pretty much nothing happened for the 2 days. And yeah, it's a shame, really, because you kind of thought it was going to make a good go at it at that point. And I'm quite early on in my analysis for this week, given that it's bank holiday and I only got back late last night from being away. But I have backed two this morning that I think will go well. And there's a short list, which is quite long, that I'll need to work through over the next few hours before we publish tomorrow, which will be around about lunchtime, I think. I did back Matthew Fitzpatrick earlier. He's been nibbled in. I've got him at 22s early on. He's 18-1 at the best price now. And I think if there's anyone who's really going to be motivated to go out and, you know, desperately try and win this, it is Fitzpatrick. And I think if you look at the course, which is one of these classical tree line types, it's just under 7,000 yards, par 72. It's kind of like a Heathland type track from what I can see. Hasn't been played for any professional tournament other than on the Echo Tour, where we've got no stats to really give us a view of what it's played like. But it feels to me it's the kind of track that will suit someone like Fitzpatrick. I think it will be relatively demanding off the tee, with it being tree-lined pine trees. A lot of bunkers, something like 150, 160 bunkers over the course of the track. And there's lakes dotted around, which will be impacting the very wayward as well. So I think you want a kind of a short, tidy, well, not necessarily short, but a tidy player from tee to green, and then someone who, when they're on the putting surfaces, can make a few putts. And one thing with Fitzpatrick that has improved over the last few years has definitely been his putting as well. And it feels to me, I mean, we'll see what it's like when we actually get a full view of it on TV, but I think we'll find that there's going to be some correlations with the kind of tracks where he's done well. You know, we know he's won round Woburn. He's defending next week in Crans-sur-Sierre. So those two kind of tree-lined, strategic plotting type tracks where you need to, you know, it's not all about brute force, it's about playing yourself into position. and performing well on the greens when you get there. I think Fitzpatrick will be the kind of player who could well perform at this kind of track. And although it's a bit skinny, I think if there's a player near the top of the market, it's the most likely to perform. I get the feeling it's him. Yeah, and there's been bits of form about him for the last... you said earlier he's had a disappointing year, Steve, and I think you're right. But if you look back at this Scottish Open a couple of months back, he was second going into Sunday. Didn't happen on the Sunday. Finished 14th in the end. But he was in position there, and that was the first time for a while. Open with 66 at the Bridgestone as well. Finished 65, 68 on his last start at the Wyndham.
Yeah.
And again, there's some good signs with the bits and pieces that we did see of him. That his putting looked quite good. And as I say, if you're going to need to make a few birdies around this place. When they played this on the Echo Tour, they played it on over 3 days, 54 holes, and they were kind of getting to 12, 13 under these Nordic League players. So you'd expect that over four days with decent conditions, it's likely to be quite receptive. The wind's not particularly strong. I'm thinking it's going to be a kind of high teens, maybe 20 under par. That kind of bracket gets the job done here. So someone's going to need to have their putting boots on and give himself a lot of chances by hitting fairways and greens.
In my mind, he's over the Ryder Cup now. Because he must be a mental scenario where he knows he's not going to get a pick unless something crazy happens and he was to win this. So he probably feels that the pressure's off. So go and play properly, go and play nicely.
There's two aspects to the pressure. First, it's all or nothing, isn't it? So he can play with a level of he's not protecting anything. It's all about.
There's far more pressure on the likes of Olsen, Peters, and Pepperell than there is on Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, and the other thing I like, as I said a second ago, is that he's defending next week in Kranz. So, again, I like to look at that as just a factor to see who's defending the following week and whether the week before you can take a little bit of pressure off by knowing that you're going to have a lot of media commitments, etc., the following week. There's a few little pointers there, and I don't think his underlying form's that bad. I think there's a bit to like about him. As I say, I've taken a punt on him to do well, so we shall see. The other guy I've backed is David Horsey. Now, Horsey's got a great record in this event. Now, he's moved to a new track, but I think, again, the old Himalayan track was one that suited more plotting-type players who, the shorter players could get away with it off the tee because it was more about position. And if you get yourself hot on the greens, then you can put yourself in a position to contend. And he'd won there, he'd come second last year. And if you look, both times they were off of poor runner form and then a break. But he came back after a 3 or 4 week break both times and got the job done. And again, looking at his stats recently, he hasn't played. It'll be 4 weeks since he teed it up this week when he goes out on Thursday. And prior to that, he'd finished 40th at the Irish Open, but his driving accuracy was good. He was second for driving accuracy that week. He finished 39th on his last start in Germany at the Porsche, but... he was first for Putzberg greens and regulations. Clearly, there's aspects of his game that are working okay. He's talked on Twitter about his inconsistency and what we've seen in the past, particularly when he's come up to this event, is he kind of has his summer holiday, irons a few things out, gets himself back out competitively, and he never very nearly won last year. It was only that Julian Suri played out of his skin. You look at it, I think it was a 4-shot victory in the end, but bear in mind that Horsey treble bogeyed the last when he needed a birdie to force a playoff. So I think there's a lot to like, and I got 80-1 against about Horsey earlier with 7 places each way, so that seemed like a fair return to me. A few more that I'm looking at. Romain Vatel is one that may well get added in. I just need to make my mind up on him. David Lipsky is another one that's got a lot of things going for him. He's got a lot of good form on this kind of layout. Lee Slattery's playing well. Wallace, I've got to decide whether I'll go back in on him again. Even Xander Lombard, who played well at the Open Championship, he won on the Sunshine Tour like the week before last, I think, and he's available 125-1. So there's a few that are kind of close to my thinking.
Wow, that's a big price.
For Xander, yeah, given that he played so well at the Open, and then he, you know, backed that up a few weeks later, as I say, I think it was the week before last, wasn't it, on the Sunshine Tour. And if you look at his stats from that week, he was very, very strong from tee to green. Very strong.
Do you think he can play on a tight tree line track?
That's
or is he more your wide open spaces like the Checo?
If I hadn't seen those driving accuracy and greens and regs stats from that Sunshine Tour event, I don't think I'd have really wanted to consider him. But if you're striking the ball that well, then I suspect you can get round on this kind of track. The thing with Lombard is he's massively inconsistent. There's, you know, you could get five miscuts on the trot and then you'll pop up and do something. And that's why you're getting 125-1. It's going to be a big risk if you go down that route. But he could either top five or, you know, get a horrible miscut. I think there's not going to be a great deal in between of those two outcomes. So, I've not quite made my mind up with him yet, but he's one to ponder, I think.
Anyone for you, Barry, over in Denmark?
I've had one bet, and it's Robert Rock.
Mm. The Rockstar.
He's playing well, Rocky, isn't he?
Yeah. Mm. He played very nicely at the Nordea Masters on a course I'd say is not quite ideal to him, and he should be well able to plot his way around here. And so I thought 40-1 was obviously you'd like a little bit more in a guy that hasn't won in a few years, but there's seven places there, and he's playing nicely, so I think he'll have the patience to work his way around here.
He's had a bit of a resurgence this season, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I was just looking there. He's his stroke average is a half a stroke better for this year than it has been any other. Sorry, it's his best year for stroke average in the European Tour ever by a half a stroke. So that all bodes well. And if he has a design on a win, this, you know, why not this?
With Rock, a lot of it comes down to him reading the putts and being comfortable with his caddy and, between them working out the lines. And it's given, you go back to the Indian Open back in March, and from then on, most of his putting performances have been really strong, you know, relative for him at least. And, you know, you're seeing a few top five, top six putting average performances in those, you know, in 8 or 10 events. And that for him will signal a decent set of results, because from tee to green, he can play well. Wouldn't put you off that whatsoever, Barry, you must say.
Well, it's a bit late because it's already on.
It's gone. Over in the States, we've got the Dell Technologies Championship, absolutely loaded. 98 players this week. Fowler doesn't play. He's injured with his oblique problem. Francesco Molinari has also decided not to play this. Of course, top 100 in the FedEx Cup could have played. Gets cut down to 70 this week for the next trip where they go to Philadelphia for the BMW Championship. Boston, it's a track we see every year, although we won't be seeing it next year because it's going to be on a rotor system. For me, it's a course that's kind of inland linksy kind of feel to it. It's relatively short at 7,300 yards. It's a par 71. It's got wide fairways, and if you look at the list of players that have won here, it does shout rather loudly from the rooftops. Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Roy twice, Ricky Fowler, Henrik Stenson, even Charlie Hoffman. It does shout power off the tee. It also shouts, even if you're not powerful off the tee, like Stenson won here in 13, but as we know with Henrik, he's also very, very aggressive when it comes to going for the green, and very aggressive in the way that he plays short par fours and par fives. So I'm looking for players that are very aggressive in that kind of ilk this week. The greens are pure bent grass, although when you read comments about them, they say that it's very, very grainy bent grass. So we're moving away from Poana this week. It's an original Arnold Palm design that's had recent work from Gil Hance. So if you're looking for Hance renovations, you can look at Trump National at Doral, 2014 through 2016. Ridgewood Country Club, where they played the Barclays in 2010 and 2014. And also Plainfield Country Club, where they played the Barclays in 2011 and 2015. For me, and you can look at this a number of ways, for me, I'm just looking for very aggressive sorts who've got length off the tee. I won't be selecting Zach Johnson this week or someone like Brian Harman. I want real aggressiveness off the tee. It seems to suit those with a high ball flight. It also seems to suit those that are very, very good when it comes to par 5 birdie or better, so par 5 scoring. It's a course that's got difficult par 5s, and that makes it interesting because it tends to mean that those that are very good on the par 5s can still make eagles and birdies, and that really, you know, starts to make them pull away from the rest of the field who struggle on the 5s. Mm. The fours are quite easy, or relatively easy, compared to the fives. But for me, and you look at this year in, year out, it's always guys that have got very good par five, birdie or better numbers going into the event that tend to get the job done here. And, you know, when you look at the likes of Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, there's one golf course that shouts to me straight away, and that's Quail Hollow. Thomas won the PGA Championship there last year. McIlroy's won there twice. He's maiden victory there back in 2010, it would have been. Ricky Fowler got his maiden victory there in 2015. Webb Simpson won here in 2011. We know that he plays well at Quail Hollow. I think he's got a house there. So there's definite links to Quail Hollow. You can see that from the guys that have done well here in the past. So that's not a bad link in terms of correlating course form. Muirfield Village is another one. Players also Sawgrass. Justin JT has been third at the Players. Henrik Stenson has clearly won at the Players, as has Ricky Fowler. We know that McIlroy can kind of navigate his way around there, although he's not won. And Webb Simpson, who won this in 2011, he won the Players this year. So again, Sawgrass is another decent correlating course, as is PGA National, where they played a Honda Classic. McIlroy's a winner there. JT won there this year. Ricky Fowler won there.
They're kind of trickier tracks, aren't they? But this doesn't tend to be as high scoring. It tends to be, the scoring tends to be a little bit better, doesn't it?
Yes. JT won at 17 under. He was 3 clear though. The rest of the field was sub 14 under. McIlroy won him at 15 under in 2016. But those 2 years were particularly blowy. I don't see that this year. There's been loads and loads of rain in the Boston area, like double what we normally see, so I expect the course to be quite soft at the start. If it's really soft, then it's really, really quiet in terms of wind. Sub 20 under is possible around here.
Yeah,
they have extended it, mine, but you know, these days, you know, 60 yards here with the technology they're using and the driver distance numbers we see now, I don't think it makes a great deal of difference. No. Stenson won here at 22 under. It kind of shouts plotters to a certain extent. It's outright power or plotters for me. I'm not going for DJ, who tops the market at 9-1. I'm tempted on Justin Thomas at 11s, but 11s is 11s, and there's never been a defending champion that's actually won this title. That doesn't mean he doesn't win. The one at the top of the market I can't resist, and I've gone in on, not heavily as such. It's a proper bet, but it's not a huge bet. I'm going to go for Brooks Koepka, who I'm seeing at 14-1. I'm seeing Brooks Koepka at the same price as Jason Day, and I can't quite work that out. Would you take Brooks Koepka at 14-1, or would you take Jason Day?
But like, the bookies always do this with Brooks, don't they? We see it time and again. He's a few points longer than he should be. I just don't think that. It's kind of like the Bubba Watson thing. He's just not a really popular bet amongst punters. So He's just a few points further out.
Well, he's at 14-1, and before we withdrew, Ricky Fowler was as short as 18-1, and you just think, I don't get it really. Yeah. But so I'll take it. Don't you worry. I tell you one of the trends that there is here. I'll read this from what I've written. And the omens for PGA Championship winners here is good. That should be our good. I need your grammar correct, Paul. I'm just changing this. Sorry, listeners, I'm actually changing the copy.
Change it on the fly.
I'm changing it on the fly. Rory McIlroy won at Keir Island in 2012 and then won this at 12-1. In 2014, McIlroy won at Valhalla and finished fifth here. 2016 saw Jimmy Walker take the Wanamaker trophy back to his Texas base and then finish third here at 100-1. And 12 months ago, Justin Thomas won his first major at the Quail Hollow hosted PGA and finished sixth at the Northern Trust and then came here and won at 20-1. Even Henrik Stenson in 2013 finished second at the PGA Championship hosted at Oak Hill before winning this at 28-1. It happened. So I'm on Koepka. It takes a lot to motivate Brooks, as we know. He doesn't do normal tournaments, but I think the fact that he's fifth in the FedEx Cup playoffs, so, you know, if he did take his foot off the pedal and he's really got a design to win the FedEx Cup, he'd be outside the top five, and we know that's absolutely critical to win the FedEx Cup. So I think that'll keep him interested. He likes the courses. I've read that already. He's putts well on the greens here. And, of course, if he pretty much wins, I think, this week, he becomes world number one. If that isn't going to motivate a player, I don't know what is. And
he missed it by one shot last week.
He did, yeah. I get the feeling with Brooks as well. Becoming a world number one, I don't think that's... When I've seen Justin Rose put up, and he's been put up again this week, that if Rose does well this week and wins, he becomes world number one. I think someone like Rose, that to me is a negative. I might be wrong, but I see that as a negative because I see that almost as a hurdle for him. With Brooks, I see that as a motivator. That's the kind of thing he's going to thrive on. He wants to be world number one. So
yeah,
I see that as a plus point for him.
In his post-round interviews last week, he just kept mentioning how, you know, previous years his playoff record's not been great, but he's really trying to focus in on fixing that this year and going forward. So it seems he's got the he's focused anyway this week. Whether he pulls it off or not is another thing. But even when he's not playing his best, he still seems to be in the right place, kind of like where DJ was when DJ was on his great run. He was still there, 10th, 12th, 8th, on the weeks when he wasn't winning. So always keeping himself in the hunt.
First for strokes gained tee to green at Firestone. Second at Belrive and third last week. Not bad, is it?
It's all right.
It's not bad.
He's a top player.
He is a very good player. I'm definitely on him. There's going to be interest in Jason Day this week. There's going to be interest in Rory McIlroy, who was chalked up as big as 22s. That's gone already, 20-1, and I can see why. But I'm not really interested in players, especially from a win perspective, who, you know, winners on the FedEx Cup playoffs play every event. That just happens year in, year out. So after Spieth's performance last week, I can't go anywhere near him. There's far too many doubles and triples for my liking. And that then takes me down to the likes of Tiger Woods, who I was on last week. You could with Tiger. I'm still debating whether to go to Tiger. I'm a bit like you, Paul. I'm still got a short list. So Tiger's on there. John Rahm's on there because I think on a course where you can bully and you can use all of your power, Ridgewood wasn't that. He actually averaged 280. Off the tee last week, so he clearly clubbed down and got frustrated and played terribly, and that's what he does. Yeah. On an open, wide golf course that accepts his brute power off the tee, this is more, by far more, his cup of tea, John Rahm. And 25-1 is 5 points bigger than we were seeing last week at a course that wasn't going to suit him, so I'm tempted very much on John Rahm. And then we're down to the likes of Adam Scott, who's now into 28-1. Justin Rose at 25-1. Tony Finau is at 30-1. I wonder with Finau if he thinks he's done enough now for the Ryder Cup, or whether he's just going to keep his pedal to the metal.
Yeah, I think it'd be.
I can't read him. I've never been able to read Tony Finau. I'm not going to start now. If I tipped him, he'd finish 34th. If I don't tip him, he probably finishes second. So
the classic Finau position.
You got it.
He's like the American Harrington.
He doesn't
just bunch of seconds. Now look, Harrington's won way more than Finau, obviously, but also notorious for the amount of second places.
The other thing with Tony is he never seems to be able to back up a performance. You know, you look at Billy Horschel. We know Billy over the years. He loves going back to back, and when he's playing well, he goes back to back. Tony, you just don't see that.
Mm.
That takes me down to another player I'm very interested in is Patrick Cantlay. He's 33-1 with Paddy Power, who are offering seven places each way this week, a 50 odds, as are Betfred and Boyle Sports. So that's the best each way place promotion you can get this week. And I just get the feeling with Cantlay, he's playing some very, very nice golf. I know he's really slow, boring to watch. The putter's warm. He's hitting greens for fun. His tee to green game is excellent. I think he was 12th here on debut last week. And these are the numbers that kind of grabbed my attention. If I could find them, naturally. Fourth in going for the green across the whole season, and also 25th of par 5 birdie or better. 11th in the FedEx Cup. And I just think with Cantlay, if he's got, as we said at the top of the show, we don't really know what's going to happen. But if Cantlay was to win this week, that then opens the door potentially for him to, or at least finish in the top, you know, second or third, and then push on next week at the BMW Championship. There's still hope there for the Ryder Cup for Cantlay.
Yeah, you've seen it with Ryan Moore, didn't we? It's, you know, there's someone who can get very hot over these final few weeks, can force their way in, can't they?
You could also look at Patrick Reed. I think he played nicely last week. The one I'm tempted on is Billy Horschel, who we know finished second here a few years ago, and he should have won. And then he went the next week or 2 weeks later to the BMW Championship, won that. Then he won at Eastlake. We know he strings performances together. And if that man could have putted better last week, his tee to green game was absolutely phenomenal, Horschel. I mean, I watched, you know, the coverage last night, and the way he was hitting the ball was absolutely phenomenal, Billy Horschel.
Yeah.
And in my mind, he isn't a pure Poana player, but Bentgrass, on a course where we know he's done well in the past, and we know that with Billy, when he's motivated, when he's confident, and he was walking off around with Adam Scott last, and he could just tell he was into it. He was burning a lot of lips, and he was animated. He's really into it right now, Horschel. And I just think 50-1 I'm seeing about him. That's a decent each way punt for me, Billy Horschel.
Yeah, I agree. If you look back in the 2014 when he did that. He had that spell that you talked about where he went second, first. Yeah. That was driven by some fantastic ball striking stats. We know he's a great ball striker anyway, but you know, when he gets that absolute top gear, he's very, very strong. And if you look at his greens in regulation over the last few weeks, they've been, you know, his performances have been absolutely fantastic.
Phenomenal.
Fourth on that count in the USPGA, second for driving accuracy, and sixth for greens in regulation at Wyndham, and then third for greens and reg last week. As you said, if he'd have putted well last week, then you know, who knows. But yeah, I agree with you, Steve. Of the two that I've backed, Horschel's one of them.
I do like Horschel a lot this week, it has to be said. He was 7th at the PGA greens and regulation, 8th at Sedgefield, and he was 5th last week. That for me is that I think that's a green light. I'm surprised he hasn't been cut a lot more. You know, why do you think he hasn't been cut?
It's a strong field, Steve, isn't it? Mm. It's a very strong field. You know, what was he at 100-1 last week? So
I'm just looking at. I'm looking up from my notes from last year what price he was. I thought he was shorter than that.
There was a bit of 100-1 about him last week early on.
On 100-1. But you're saying that, I mean, he was 100-1 with some firms and he was a short of 66s.
Yeah.
So when you still got 50s out there, I don't think that's too much of a cut for a guy that played really, really nicely last week. And we know,
and as you said,
he's a winner on bent grass, isn't he?
Yeah, as you said, he's the kind of guy that strings those two big weeks together, or three big weeks together. That is how he rolls.
And so what? And we're talking Ryder Cup. You know, if he won this week and won next week,
just got into my head.
Yeah, he's right in there. And I think one of his regrets when he went, if you go back to the time he won this, is that it was Ryder Cup year, I believe, and they'd already made all of their selections, and and that was what prompted these changes for Team USA. It was Billy Horschel.
Yeah, I remember the debate. I remember it now.
And he missed out on the Ryder Cup, and he was the best player on the planet at that point.
Yeah, sat at home.
Sat at home, twiddling his thumbs, counting $10 million that he just won. Well, 11.5 with the tournament win, but yeah, exactly. Crazy. Sorry, Barry, what were you going to say?
I was just saying, if he wins this week, that's... How can he not be in the discussion for that, you know, effectively the fourth spot?
Too right.
You know, because, you know, third last week, wins this week, and say pops in a top 10 next week.
If you say, you know, you're sitting down the pub over a pint of beer and we're having a chat, and you say to me, tell me a list of streaky players, Billy Horschel would be in that, very close to the top of it. Like a Ryan Moore. When Ryan Moore gets really hot with a putter, follow him, especially on bent grass. It's the same with Horschel. When he gets hot, stick with him. It was interesting because he played that Barbasol Championship, didn't he, which coincided with the Open.
Yeah.
And he didn't just go there and make up the numbers and finish. He finished second. And he seems to just be in the process with Todd Anderson, his coach. Just seems to be living it at the moment. And he's really starting to fire on all cylinders. And as we've always said, and it was the same with Scott last week, and it's been the same with him a couple of outings now. When these top quality ball strikers, when that putter's warming, you've got to get on board. So, yeah, Billy Horschel for me.
Just from a fan's point of view, I think he would be brilliant to have the Ryder Cup.
You know, he's great value,
personality. Yeah, I think it would be great entertainment watching him play.
Those are the ones I'm mulling over. I can't fit them all in, but that's why I'm going to keep my stakes on Kepka down, because if I go three, you know, 4 points each way on Kepka, I might as well shut up shop for the week. I think that Kepka has got the best chance of all those players, and if he does win, no one will be surprised, and it would be nice with the profit and loss. But I'd like to also fit in some juicier prices as well, so I need to come up with a balanced attack. And if Kepka gets a place and doesn't cover the week, it's not the end of the world. You know, when we're looking for winners, that's the kind of strategy you need to take. Which one of you guys wants to put up your views on it? I know clearly you're on Horschel, Paul.
Yeah, I've got one more, but you go, Barry, and I'll tell you my other one.
Yeah, well, I'm also on Cantlay. I was on him last week as part of my probably worst week of gambling ever. I went heavy on a number of bets, and of course, when you swing for the fences, you sometimes miss. With that said, I'm sticking with Gary Woodland. I'm gonna die by him or win with him. Either or, I think I'm all the way to the end of the season now.
You're betting him till he dies, yeah.
I think so. Yeah. He's like we were talking about. He's put all the right things in place to get his game up to the next level. He putted like a blind man last week. So
doesn't matter though. This is the thing we've always said: judging putting. It's very, very difficult, isn't it, to trend? And it just clicks. But it's by far the hardest skill set to predict who's going to do well this week. And it could just click this week. And next thing you know, the tee to green game's excellent, and he's making putts.
And he could get on, like you said, he could get on the putting green, and he could just, something could just feel right or click, or he just, you know, moves a finger half an inch and that's it. It'll all come together. So I'm all in with Woodland at this stage, and you know, if you listen to the show next week, unless he wins this week, I'm probably going to be saying the exact same thing. so I'm not we're not going to copy and paste this piece this part of Just cut it in. And I do have... Do you want to go, Paul? Because I have one big bet.
Yeah, you go.
Sorry, I have one long odds guy. So you go in and I'll come in with my long odds.
Yeah, the other guy I've backed is Tyrrell Hatton. I know Hatton's a debutant here, but if you look through the history, the likes of Stenson and McIlroy have both won with relatively little experience in TPC Boston. So I don't find that as being a particular hindrance. What I get with Hatton is that he's been putting some nice low rounds in without actually backing it up with two or three other rounds. So 65, 64 to open at the Scottish, 64 to close at the USPGA for 10th, 64 to close last week. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, but he went out and bought a new putter off the shelf and clearly has fallen straight in love with it. And with me, Hatton's one of those players that it's a tiny thing that can spring him to life. There's a tiny bit of confidence that appears for whatever reason, or there's something goes right. You know, he's such an emotional character that when something happens, it's positive for him. It can just manifest itself and snowball into something stronger. Now, if you look, he's GIR, first for GIR at the USPGA, sixth for GIR last week, so that's good.
Oh, he's hitting tons of greens, yeah.
Yeah, he is, yeah. And, you know, if the putter's now going to be compliant, it might be a one-off round with his new putter, and it falls to pieces this week. But if you couple those together for four rounds, he's going to score incredibly heavily. And if you go, this time of year for him can be pretty prolific. You go back to last year, after the USPGA, he followed up with former third, eighth, first, those next four starts. So it can be, you know, in terms of biorhythms, in terms of him feeling comfortable with his game after the major season's finished, whatever it is, he can clearly start to find his form at this back end of the season. Yeah, there's nothing to prove from a Ryder Cup perspective. It's just go out there and play with some reckless abandon, and I think he could go well this week. 66.
Yeah, it's a good price. He needs to go well, doesn't he? Because he won't make the BMW. Where is he? He's
71st or something.
Yeah, he's 71st. So he needs to have a decent enough week to get well into a decent position where he might make it East Lake. And for these guys like Hatton and Fleetwood, making East Lake's a huge, huge statement.
Yeah.
You know, when you're effectively broken into the PGA Tour into the FedEx Cup for the first year. If you can get to Eastlake, that's a superb performance.
Mm.
So he's got plenty to play for. And like you said, his greens in regulation numbers at the moment are phenomenal.
Oh, they're great. I mean, as I say, for me, it's that spark of confidence that just comes from something. And it could be something as random as, you know, him having gone out and literally bought this putter, you know, found he's got on with it, and the rest, you know, could be history. Mm. We shall see. It's the only other one I've backed other than Horschel.
Who's your come on, Barry? We're waiting here with bated breath. I'm going to give it the big.
Don't.
I reckon you. I mean, I know you. I reckon you might have gone for Benny Ann.
No.
Okay.
No.
Are you? I burned is it money a big, in bigger price? I burned, is it I, even bigger.
I burned money on him last week. It actually is bigger. Yeah.
I'm not Luke List.
No.
Not Siwoo Kim.
Oh, here's Siwoo. I mean, I thought Siwoo was back in our good books, and he's firmly off the Christmas card list.
You're going Jason Kokrag, are you?
No. I've gone for Daniel Berger.
What are you getting Berger at?
I picked him up at 110 seven places with Betfred.
Not bad.
Yeah, I thought so. It was best places, best price combo. Might do a little top up on the exchange as well, just to really land the bomb. go even deeper into the losses. He's had a couple of good results at this course. Where are we now? He's had one good result. He had a 12th there 3 years ago. But he's at a 12th and a 15th in the last 3 weeks. Nothing phenomenal in his long game stats, but he was putting the lights out last week, which is nice. So if he can just tidy up the long game a little bit and he can contend.
It's funny with Berger, isn't it? Because at the PGA Championship, wasn't he like the best in the field for strokes going tee to green or something incredible? Because he shot something silly in the first round, and then he was the best player on the course across the last three rounds. Played really, really well. So then a lot of people jumped on him at TPC Southwind, missed the cut. And then last week, of course, he putts like a demon. So if he can actually marry both sets of skills together, he's going to be absolutely dangerous.
Yeah, and he can show up in the big events. Yeah. I mean, he has sixth at the US Open.
Yeah.
That's no joke at that golf course.
He's also done it at the playoffs before, where I think he was second to Jason Day 1 year. And he got on a bit of a roll in the playoffs, so he's got experience of doing that.
Yeah, good result in the PGA Championship, even more recently, 12th. Mm, so, yeah, 110. I thought it was that's going to be a fun one to have.
I've got a vague.
The reason I said he was longer is because I was looking at his Betfair exchange odds. They were 150 or 160. Sorry, he wasn't longer than Ben Yan.
He's a short of 66s with Unibet, 110 with Betfred. So there's a huge disparity there.
Hmm. I've got a feeling you were on him last year, Steve, actually.
Oh, probably. Every time I bat Berger, he misses the cut.
Please stay away.
I'm going nowhere near him. Yeah, I can give you a long list of players that never deliver for me. You know, the Chris Kirks, the Tony Finaus of this world.
You really need the web.com tour graduates to come onto the tour.
So I've got a story there before we finish. I've got a story there before we finish. And you know what I'm going to say. Robert Streb was the last one off my list last week.
Yeah.
Of course he was, Steve. But there's a huge link with that tournament, Ohio State and Quail Hollow. Sure enough, he's finished top five or six at Quail Hollow, done well on courses that link in. And I thought, oh no, he's playing awfully. Goes and wins it 100 and somewhat to one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Guys that go well on courses, it seems you can almost throw the form book out the window sometimes. What an infuriating thing we do.
Who do you think will win that none of us have tipped up?
Oh, Spieth will do it just to annoy the hell out of you.
Yeah, that's the one that's in my... Yeah, Spieth or Woods, it's going to be, isn't it?
Spieth. Probably will be. There you go. Lump on Spieth.
It's going to be a fascinating week of golf. A lot of questions are going to be answered in terms of the Ryder Cup. And, I'm looking forward to it, chaps. So thank you very much for your input this evening.
Cheers, guys.
We will be back next week for the BMW Championship and also for the... You've got the Amiga Masters, haven't you?
Yeah, that's it. That's
the always one. A good event. Yeah, Sergio will probably drag himself out for that one, so that'll be good to watch.
Ah, he'll win it. He'll win it.
He'll win it. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.